Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Egg Chasers, and welcome to this, the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. Here with you 52 weeks a year, multiple times through the Lions Tour, because we love rugby and we will let nothing get in the way. Not even the hottest day of the year and the final few hours of sunshine in it will not spoil the fact we want to be here talking about rugby. There's nowhere we'd rather be than in a darkened dungeon.
Yeah, subterranean, heavily insulated room with a lot of electrical equipment.
Oh, beautiful.
I'm Tim.
I'm Phil.
As we're introducing ourselves, I'm JB.
I was just conscious on the last one that
you're the professional. Pull yourself together.
Yeah, you say like, hi Tim. You can introduce yourself as much as anyone. It's a shame that there's nothing visual capturing this particular podcast because JB's wearing his Sam Burgess vest.
Oh, I am. I feel it's so liberating as well.
Is this
a Bentio vest now?
He doesn't play for Bath, does he?
He doesn't, but Bentio is the player that Sam Burgess should have been.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is true.
I think you look more like Freddie Burns wearing that right
now. I'm modelling my arms on Billy Burns.
we were slightly obsessed with Sam Burgess in his Bath rugby Canterbury vest when all the promotional pictures were out.
It does seem a shame, doesn't it, that all that effort went into promoting Sam Burgess and he was the wrong rabbito to promote.
Yeah.
I kind of feel they should go back through all the marketing literature and just simply replace Sam's head with Ben's head.
Just rewrite history.
Well, we've got a bumper podcast for you today. Obviously, we'll touch on the stuff that's going on in New Zealand. However, if you're tuning into this and thinking this is going to be a review of the game against the Maori All Blacks, then you've jumped one in our podcast feed. You need to hit subscribe and you need to go back and listen to the podcast we did yesterday, which is all about that. And while you're there, hit subscribe in your Apple Podcast app, in your Acast app, or in your, well, there's all sorts of other podcast apps, like Phil was just taking us through the stats for Player FM, which I'd never heard of before.
It's good. It's the one I use for my podcasts.
Well, it's one that many people use for their podcasts. More people use that for their podcasts for Egg Chasers than any other rugby podcast on earth.
They certainly do.
Fact. So yeah, wherever you are, you'll find us. Wherever you can get an RSS feed, you can hit subscribe and you'll get all of our podcasts. Yeah, we've got the England-Argentina game. We've got Scotland's amazing win over Australia. We've got Wales and their routine win over Tonga. We've got the Under-20s Rugby World Championship and plenty of other things besides to talk about. Where shall we start? Do you know what? I'm going to say we really should start with the best performance of the weekend, the best result of the weekend. Scotland's only third ever victory in Australia.
Mm.
Yeah, it's only right and proper. I know the Scottish fans, some of them would sometimes get a bit defensive when I point out how many Kiwis and South Africans have been in that side in the past, but that doesn't detract from the fact that...
Well, there's only one at the moment, and that's Maitland, who's got a Scottish mother.
Josh Strauss, WPNL.
Yeah, they both came off the bench.
Yeah, but they're both South Africans rather than Kiwis.
Toulis is Australian.
They've got quite a few, but that's fine. That's a different point. But all I'm saying is actually credit where credit's due. We are starting the podcast with Scotland fans.
Yeah, we started immediately into a negative, but let's go on to some real positives.
Oh, total positives.
This was a tremendous performance by Scotland. It was exceptional right from the word go.
What was the attendance?
It's one of the things I don't have to hand. I couldn't tell you. It wasn't a full stadium. I can tell you that much.
Mm.
Aussie rugby's in a bad way, but again, I'm not trying to detract from what was happening.
Yeah. We're really selling it.
Let's talk about the Scotland performance in particular.
Yes.
Halfbacks were exceptional.
They were.
Mm.
Finn Russell and Ali Price really controlled the game and looked threatening with ball
in hand.
Do you know
what the biggest indictment is of Laidlaw?
Go on.
Every time he's replaced, he doesn't seem to win his position back. And his replacement seems to do remarkably well.
Willie Hines.
Ali Price.
Do you think he's going to usurp Morgan Parra?
Oh, sorry, is that a serious question? Well, who knows? I mean, I guess the point is, if Morgan Parra isn't kicking, he can step up and kick, and they like nines at kick.
Parra can kick, and Camille Lopez can kick.
And I think Clermont is the sort of team that wants to put out their best team all the time. I mean, I guess, what do they want him for? Just continuity. I mean, I suppose as well, Parra's not very physically imposing, to put it mildly.
They play a similar type of game. So it is, you have a very similar replacement who can play exactly the same strategy.
Yeah. Yeah, so I guess what they're looking for there is continuity. It's not like when Wales had Mike Phillips and Dwayne Peel in the same squad, two guys who do two different things. It's just more of the same, but maybe not as good.
Yeah,
maybe slightly different. I'll give them the benefit of the doubt.
Similar.
There you
go. But halfbacks were great. Finn Russell, Ali Price. The whole back line was good, and they wanted to attack from everywhere. The back row as well, I thought, was probably the difference. So Australia, Michael Hooper was brilliant and aggressive and athletic and everything that Michael Hooper is. But that trio of John Barkley, who has been magnificent for Scarlets, carried that form in, and then Hamish Watson and Ryan Wilson with then Josh Strauss off the bench, they were brilliant.
And Josh Strauss is a bit of a machine, actually. His work rate is incredible. He's kind of a bit Waldrum-esque in that he gets a lot of small carries.
Yeah. But those other boys were brilliant. Hamish Watson, John Barkley, Ryan Wilson. The work rate that they put in was superb. And conversely, the Australian team. So I mentioned Michael Hooper, who was good. He was really good, actually.
He was.
He was exceptional. And Israel Folau was exceptional. He scored two tries.
Oh, that salmon jump.
Yeah.
Oh, just great athleticism.
How long is he going to put up with this?
I've never seen anything like it, that jump.
Did he use his knees to get on top of someone? Or did he just jump really high?
He just jumped really, really, really high and then caught the ball right at the tip of his fingers as well.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. How long do you think Israel Folau is going to put up with this Wallabies side?
Those two are... It looked like Folau and Hooper and then a few blokes they've picked up down the pub. And there's boys who in the past have been very good players. Bernard Foley.
Yeah.
Is a few years ago when the
World Cup, he was...
when the Tars won it, in the World Cup.
Yeah.
Exceptional, looked average. Genia looked average. Kurandrani a few years ago, such a dangerous runner, such a threat, and just looked average.
I know we said we're going to talk about how good Scotland are, and we're probably going to talk about how bad Australia are. It's hard to put your finger on exactly what's happening to Australian rugby, because the players seem to be the same. I think their coach in Cheka is a very good coach, but just nothing's happening.
I'm not sure. We spoke briefly about it last week, didn't we? About the quality of players coming through,
and the ARU seem all at sea. They're fighting with the kind of there's battles with the Super Rugby organisers and some of the sides. Some of them were.
I mean, there is speculation that the whole board is going to go sooner rather than later.
Yeah,
and they bring in a few guys from the NRL. Folau being an obvious shining example of what it can be, but boys like Ito Nabuli and Carmichael Hunt, who both started this game, didn't really look like they fit in. I know it's early in their Wallabies careers.
I remember. But
are they the best players available? They are the best players available.
Well, Carmichael Hunt had a stint in Stad.
Was it too long? He definitely had a stint in France.
Is Carmichael Hunt the one that there's some stories about?
They've all got stories about them.
Yeah, yeah.
You just need to dig
there's escapades. I don't want to speculate. But no, from what I've read, there's top-down issues, like board organisation, fighting between different... what are they? Not provinces. What are they? Franchises, whatever.
Yeah, franchises,
for funding
regions,
stuff. And then there's some bottom-up issues with grassroots fundings not being...
Yeah.
Yeah, that does sound particularly important. They also have no, overarching competition. So, outside of the Super Rugby, well, they do now.
They do,
but for the longest time, they didn't. And that must be a problem. So, if you're not a Super Rugby player, you don't really get a competitive rugby.
No, you just drop... If you're not a Super Rugby player... And if you are a Super
Rugby
player...
There's not a Curry Cup or NPC, or there hasn't been.
Yeah, historically.
One.
But if you're not, if you are a Super Rugby player and you're not international, equally, there's no grade. So there's no, or there is now, but it's nowhere near as developed as Currie Cup and ITM Mitre Cup.
And also,
so they've got issues. But again, let's get back on Scotland. Greg Townsend, fair play, seems to have slotted right in.
Yes,
and yeah. we did worry that maybe Scotland could be shooting themselves in the foot, and maybe we will argue down the line that they have done by letting Vern Cotter go, who, well, could be an All Black.
It's one of those things,
future.
Isn't it? Like, do you know Eddie Jones gets loads of praise, rightly so, for what he's achieved with England, but then people often say, well, he's just picked up off all the good work that Stuart Lancaster did. Same with Steve Hansen and the All Blacks. Well, he's just picked up of all the good work that Graham Henry did.
Yeah,
and you know, Townsend's only been in the job three minutes, and they've started to win games. Vern Cotton must be furious, actually.
Vern Cotton must be absolutely raging.
Yep. But fair play, Scotland.
Fair play.
Really, really good.
Particularly the defensive rear guard. So many times you would imagine Scotland getting into that winning position and then gallantly losing at the end.
I think that's the difference, isn't it? It's like during the World Cup where they lose in the last minute.
Yeah.
And think, this team is just a team that, you know, is basically a bunch of losers. They are used to losing, they're happy with losing, and that's the standard that they'll settle for. And it doesn't seem to be like that at the moment. And I think one of the main reasons for that is, you know, the exacting standards which are demanded up in Glasgow. And I can probably carry that over.
Yeah.
And with Cockerell coming in Edinburgh.
Yeah. Decent signing.
And you can, if you can increase the strength of Edinburgh as well, because Glasgow, they didn't have the best year last year, but for the past few years, they have been a very, very good team.
Yeah. I mean, and they've signed well.
Yeah.
I mean, Edinburgh Bennett, they've signed from Glasgow.
Yeah.
They've also got Robbie Frewin, if they can make something out of him. And by all accounts, they can do, because I quite liked him in a Bath shirt in the few times I saw him.
And Barbarians, it's if you can get the best out of him.
Yeah.
That could go either way, couldn't it? That could be a guy who's brilliant or a guy who spends all his time out in the town in Edinburgh. And you just don't know which way this one's going to go.
And lots of niggly injuries.
Mm.
But Scotland play Fiji next week. It looks like it'll be 3-3, which is a very, very positive return.
Let's just revisit the Cockerell thing. So Cockerell was in a situation in Leicester where it was his philosophy versus someone else's philosophy. It didn't go too well. Now, they've brought him into Edinburgh, and at the top of the tree, there is Gregor Townsend, who doesn't strike me as a man who has the same philosophy about rugby as Richard Cockerell. And then across the nation, there is Dave Rennie. So you can kind of see the Dave Rennie players feeding nicely into what Townsend's going to do. Can you see the players in the Cockerell system feeding in nicely?
Some hard-nosed grit in a Scotland would be a nice little something to lob into that.
Yeah, but if you're
that cauldron of Scottish rugby,
If you're Gregor Townsend, right? I mean, I don't think Scotland and the population of Scotland have ever been short of hard-nosed grit with their, you know, with their 16-hour
nights. I think you could argue that with some of the ways that Edinburgh have rolled over in the Pro 12 in recent seasons. Not rolled over, but you know what I mean. Just not been very
Scotland against England this year.
Yeah. I mean, if you phone up,
right?
I mean, you can imagine a situation where Townsend is phoning up Dave Rennie, and Dave Rennie's talking about, oh yeah, I've got this guy, he's got amazing skills, pass left, right, can offload. And then he phones up Cockerell and says, yeah, I've got some gritty guys, they're really tough.
But this is a big test for Cockerell, because he's got to do it with players that he's given and that have to be predominantly Scottish, so he's only got a certain pool, he can't go out and sign loads of people, and so he's going to have to, it's going to be a good test for his coaching. Well done, Scotland.
Yeah, definitely.
We should move on. There's lots and lots to talk about.
Where would you like to
unless
move
there's
to
any
next?
Particular issues of that you want to go to?
Nope.
I just want to say, as well as subscribing, you should leave a review if you can.
Sounds promising.
So we've got an Apple Podcast review, a 5-star review. There's been a bunch of them, but I've just picked one out. Here we go. From Maru Itoji, apparently.
No.
Apparently from Maru Itoji.
Get
and
out
says,
of here.
5 stars. So good, it makes me want to clap my hands until I bleed. And we have been asked for a question on Twitter from Paul Tavner, who said, with Maru Itoji's signature hand clap, are there any other players who have a signature move? Now, important to point out that Maru Itoji's signature hand clap was simply Stuart Barnes claiming Maru Itoji had pretty much invented clapping. But nonetheless, I think we should try and answer it, as Paul's taken the trouble to tweet us to our rugby podcast.
Well, I guess you've nailed it, haven't you, Tim? The hand clap isn't really a signature. He's never really done it before. He has, but You know, it's not a unique thing to him. It's not particularly unusual. So what Paul is asking us is really, what attribute can we make up and attribute to a player?
Yeah.
So I'm going to start off with the Dan Cole thumbs up.
No. There are genuine ones. There's the Chris Ashton Ash Splash.
Oh, come on. There's no one else to know about. Everyone knows about that.
The Dan Cole stud clean.
Yeah, yes.
Oh, definitely one.
How about the Dan Cole incredulous look for being pinged for a penalty because he's on all fours?
Another penalty.
Yeah. Another one?
Handling the ball.
Come on.
Wrong side and handling on the floor.
There's like, which prop is particularly egregious at doing the looking at the touch judge and appealing rather than going to the ref? There must be one that's particularly bad.
I'll tell you what.
Genji does do that
Genji
a little
does
bit.
That a lot.
Yeah.
The Rob Evans good lad, because I still can't get over what a great lad he was in the in the France game, and quote, let him come on, sir, we don't care who it is. we'll just write off that law. Thanks, Rob.
Did you see that the Six Nations Untoward Incident panel concluded their review on that?
Oh yeah,
last week.
A letter, but nothing more.
Yeah,
a strongly worded letter to France.
Yeah, they questioned whether they'd followed procedure correctly. But they didn't go as far as to say they were attempting to get an unfair advantage from it.
Yeah.
Well, I think the problem is they followed the law exactly, and they know something was up, but they couldn't prove it.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
So anyway, no more is going to happen.
Mike Brown, he has a signature kind of angry celebration, and also a signature like just angry in general.
Just angry. Yeah.
Like his release when he scores, he looks like a man who's about to kick off outside a pub at 1 a.m. on a Saturday night down a back alley.
There's a few goal kickers trademark things, like the
Rob Cook. Was it Rob Cook?
Signature squat.
Yeah, really wide legs.
Squat and drop toilet.
Amazing.
It's like a sumo deadlift stance.
Yeah, that was probably my favourite, actually. Yeah.
The Quade Cooper, where he kind of puts his arms behind him.
Yep.
Johnny Wilkinson hold his hands together.
Yeah, that was all the rage, wasn't it? Do you know when Joey Wilson first started doing it? Because
everyone at Lowell started doing it.
Yeah, I knew one guy who would blow into his hands. So he would have both of his hands in front of him. If you imagine you just put your hands in front of him, you kind of do a loose fist.
You look like you're jerking off two men.
Yeah. Not quite. But then you blow into both of them.
Is this why Facebook Live's not working today?
It might well be.
Michael Checker, he has talking about the incredulous look from props to touch judges. He has that every single time there's a penalty given against his team, whether it's right, wrong, or indifferent. He slams his fist down on the desk, and then like hands up in the air with his mouth open, like he's astonished that a penalty could possibly
against his
be given.
Team.
Against Michael Hooper for hands in the ruck, for example.
He's probably looking at Michael Hooper and thinking, this guy's one of the best in a generation. And if he was an All Black, that would not be a penalty.
That is probably what he's thinking, to be fair.
It's an absolute joke.
And the final one, it could become a signature, but one thing I forgot to mention on our review of the Lions-Maori All Blacks game was there was one point when Tadhg Furlong gave away a really weak penalty for holding on. Basically, he was off his feet in a ruck.
Oh, yeah.
And
I liked it.
Yeah, and so the ref was saying, release, release. And he said three times before he penalised him. Mako Vunipola was stood by the side of the ruck and was clearly getting a bit frustrated. Get off the bloody ball. So Mako just whacked him, slapped him on the ass.
Did he?
A big smack.
Massive slap on the ass.
Yeah.
Which was good. So maybe it might be the signature Mako ass slap.
Yeah.
Yeah, when we were in school, we had our first ever video analysis session, and I was in lower six, so we were playing with some sixth formers, and our hooker, every time he picked up the ball to throw it in, or you know, was getting ready for the line out, the referee had come up to him and slap him on the arse every time, and we thought this was absolutely hilarious. So like for the rest of the sixth form, we were just
slapping him on the arse.
I'm not sure if that's inappropriate or not, really.
How old was he? 17, 18?
17, 18?
Ah, it's fine, let the boys play.
I generally think it's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll move on to England-Argentina via a tour story that's been sent in.
Yes. Very good.
So we're asking for some tour stories because these extra podcasts that we're doing throughout the Lions tour are being made possible by, and we're very grateful to, Raging Bull, who, I mean, I don't know, but some people might not be aware. They have this team wear and stuff that we've been aware of for a while, but they have leisure wear, which is available and perfect for the discerning rugby gentleman, I'd say.
Definitely. If you've seen any pictures from us doing our live show in Romania, and there's a few on the Egg Chasers Instagram account, I believe, then make your own mind up, but we were big fans of their gear.
Yeah, lovely stuff. So chinos, blazers, shirts, whatever. So it could be sorted for your pre-season tour or just looking the part in the clubhouse on a Saturday after a game. Ragingbull.co.uk, and you can get yourself a 15% discount just because you're listening right now by using the code EGG15. Ragingbull.co.uk, use the code EGG15 and fill your boots. And thank you very much to Chris, who sent in a tour story. He was on a tour to Southport, which isn't far from where we are, only about 30 miles up the road. The theme was wizards.
Obvs.
There was a train. There were 30 to 40 guys on a train dressed in robes, staffs, beards, and hats.
Hang on, do I know this story? Have I heard this story before? Go on.
From a gentleman called Chris.
Oh, right. Okay, yes.
While as captain, I'd organised the majority of the tour. One of my best mates, Carl, had gone all in on the theme. He made a bespoke fantasy-style drinking game with Lord of the Rings-style characters with elemental powers of attack and booze-based magic potions as punishments. Would you have gone along with this, JB, if you...
You know what? Nothing I like more than someone who goes to the nth degree with just stupid stuff.
It's all in the detail, isn't it?
Yeah. This is exactly what I like.
We played the game on the four-hour train journey and got appropriately hammered. It was a brilliant game, but a preposterous level of geekery for a mainstream rugby tour. As such, there were a few abstainers and objectors. Carl was our number eight, a big lad, solid ball carrier, also had the ability to work himself into a state of emotion, which earned him the nickname The Incredible Sulk. we've all known one of them in a team. And in a state of mild inebriation, the fact that there were abstainers and objectors started to needle him on the train leaving. He was leaving in a proper mood. Showing weakness on a rugby tour is like self-harming in a pool of piranhas. And needless to say, a few people smelt blood. Walking from the station to the hotel for the speediest of bag drops, he overheard someone badmouth the game. He smashed his staff on the ground, shattering the flashing disco ball globe at the end of it, and proceeded to cry. Some gentle consoling, and we managed to get him to the first pub and back on the beers. A few hours later, and many pints later, I realised Carl was nowhere to be seen. I found him in a toilet cubicle, complaining nobody liked his game. I want to go home. I offer to walk into the hotel, and now into the night we head. As we leave, the fresh air mingles with the day session, and the booze hits both I and Carl, struggling to walk, and he instantly regrets smashing his staff. I have mine, and he leans on me as we stumble down the main street arm in arm, quickly realising the buildings all look vaguely the same, but my homing instinct taking me in a certain direction, so we plough on. We see a brightly lit reception and like two robed moths walk to the door. No one's in reception. We check our room key. It says room 115 and head to the lifts. We go to the first floor and along the corridor. It doesn't feel familiar and the rooms are numbered, so we carry on. Although I remember thinking something seems strange. We get to room 115, peek inside. None of the rooms had doors on them.
What?
We get to room 115, peek inside through the doorless entrance and see someone in the bed who I already assumed to be an early dropout from the day's drinking. They don't even acknowledge us walking into the room. We look around and confirm it definitely isn't our room and the man in bed is 80-odd years old.
Hang on.
And not a tourist.
80-odd?
Yeah.
Hang on. No doors?
No doors.
None of the rooms have doors.
We head back down to reception, now a little more with it, and realise we're in some kind of residential mental institution.
Oh my God.
Now, Carl and I eventually made it back to our hotel, but to this day, I worry about both the lasting impact that our detour had on the residents, and particularly how the staff might have handled the mass yet unexplained sightings of two drunken wizards, one in tears, stumbling along the corridors arm in arm the morning afterwards. Yes, Richard, of course you saw a wizard last night. Two wizards? Okay, well, double the wizards, double the dose, as they say. Now open wide. Thank you very much, Chris, for that brilliant story.
Very good, Chris.
That's the sort of tour story I'm talking about. Contact eggchasers@gmail.com with yours. England or Argentina?
Another week, another England-Argentina game, another brilliant game.
Can these two play each other every week?
I know. England with a reduced squad.
Well, first of all, let me say this. I'm going to get his name wrong. Lavanini?
Lavanini.
Lavanini. That boy is hard.
Well, he is a hard
I
man.
Love him.
Oof, I think he was a little bit too hard towards the end.
Yes.
With that, like, in rugby league, they call it a torpedo tackle, don't they?
Yeah, yeah. He went very, very hard.
Nathan Hughes.
He doesn't care. The best part was when he pushed Johnny May. Johnny May spins round without even thinking, grabs him, and immediately regrets.
Yeah, no, he's massive.
But
isn't
fair, to tell you what, fair play. Next guy in, Henry Slade.
Yeah.
Henry Slade, and he grabbed hold of, I think it was Matera. So Lamanini, Lamanini and Matera against Slade. I mean, I'd quite fancy my chances against Slade and May.
Yeah, no, me and you, shall we take it?
Yeah. Fair play to Henry Slade.
Yeah.
I would not start a fight with Lamanini even if Etzebeth was my best mate and we were in a bar together.
He is enormous, isn't he?
I think
you could see he was getting frustrated. There was that torpedo tackle, which was...
I think that,
not for me, but there was a few after that no arms tackles, wasn't there?
That boy has got the potential to be the best lock in the world, or in that group of best locks.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
He's like Etzebeth has got the that image now, hasn't he? Reputation of being the hard man. I think this guy takes it to a new level.
He's good.
Hmm. Who else stood out for me for Argentina? Orlando, the centre, with one of the best offloads I think I've seen.
The out the back door.
Oh, out the back door, behind the back.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've seen him score a wonder try about a year ago. I can't remember. It was for the Jags. Can't remember against two. Really, really could be anyone.
Yeah, Jags scored some wonder tries.
To go to Argentina and win 2-0 with that squad with is outstanding.
13 players missing.
Outstanding.
Yeah, it really was. And this was a brilliant game right from the start. 8 minutes, 2 tries already.
Mm.
I was a bit disappointed it only ended up with 60 points overall rather than 80 plus.
Yeah, it did have that. It did have the potential in it to get ridiculous.
It felt like it dropped off a little bit towards the end, just because they're probably all shattered from long seasons, lots of travel.
And George Ford, after having a kind of mixed bag of a season, finishing really strongly. He's been outstanding.
He did look good.
It's interesting. We were questioning the balance of the squad when it first came out, whether it was right to bring the young guys through, whether it's right to have so many well-established players. But I think it's been a really good combination.
I do as well, actually.
Looking back on these two games, the established guys, like George Ford, like Danny Kerr, like Rob Shaw played really well. Mike Brown was brilliant.
He was absolutely. That try he set up for Piers Francis.
And the one he set up for Danny Kerr.
And the one for Danny Kerr. But that Piers Francis one was brilliant anticipation and fullback play, positioning, aerial work.
Yeah.
Great footwork to tie in two defenders, offload. Oh, it was just gorgeous.
Hmm.
If that was a New Zealander, we'd have been raving about it.
Yeah, so three things. One, directly to what you just said, the Mike Brown performance, I think David Flatman tweeted this, but if that was a New Zealander, if that was Sonny Bill, it would be all over Facebook.
Yeah.
On various rugby sites, we'd be going mental about it. It was brilliant.
Yeah.
Second point I want to make is, interesting that Piers Francis, he was... picked at 12, and I wonder if that's kind of a little insight into Eddie Jones's thinking that I am going to settle with Owen Farrell as my long-term 12 now, and George Ford as my long-term 10.
I think these two games, so you've had Lazowski and Francis playing 12. I think this is definitely confirming the way that Eddie Jones wants to go, to have ball players in the midfield as opposed to Gatland, who wants direct hard runners.
Which
in
also
midfield.
Calls into
Bentio
question.
Bentio now wishes he could go back and be Irish.
Yeah. Well, it does also call... Yeah, I mean...
Yeah,
it
he's got the beating of Henshaw.
It does stack up, doesn't it? Because Teo is kind of a fringe England player, even though he looks like a nailed-on Lions starter.
He's a finisher.
Finisher, there you go.
Finisher for England, nailed-on starter for Lions.
I wonder if they'll go towards a Piers Francis or a Lazowski, if that's the way they want to play.
Well, they'll be all Slade. Yeah. They'll be that Slade, kind of tier behind, or even someone like Harry Mallander. It feels like they will be kind of in line behind.
Harry Mallander is the one. Hear me now, believe me later. That is the guy who, once he gets his shot in the England 12 jersey,
I don't know if he's more a fullback. I don't know.
No, he's a nail.
I think 12. He's tackling 12, you reckon?
He's massive.
He's still only 20, 21, so he's got a lot of time.
Yeah.
But he will be playing with Piers Francis next season.
Yeah.
Well be them. It's 10-12.
Eddie Jones has said he wants, and very much along the New Zealand mould, something we used to, I've always been able to say about them, where they can one player can drop out and another one can step in. He said he wants three
quality
options in every position.
A squad of 45 is quite interesting, isn't it?
Which is something that Lancaster never had.
No.
You had your defined 15 and it felt like a big deal.
Do you know what the reason I think Lancaster didn't have that is because he was so loyal to his starters.
Yeah, he was too loyal, I'd say.
Yes, I think there's definitely an argument for that, but I equally think, and again, not wanting to do what you were suggesting that we could do earlier, but there's an element where, and it's the work of all the academies, but Stuart Lancaster was the head of the under-20s, the players that are coming through and are now first-team options, Stuart Lancaster set the ball rolling with this production line, which seems to have gathered a pace in recent seasons, and that's a lot of hard work by a lot of people. But there's guys now with potential that, as you say, in the tier below, it felt like a bigger drop off. And I don't think that was because Stuart Lancaster wasn't picking them. He was the guy that was picking the youngsters. It was the people before him that weren't picking anyone. Stuart Lancaster blooded loads of players.
He blooded a load of players post 2011 World Cup. Yeah. He brought a whole load of players in, but then he felt
so inflexible later on.
It felt like he had his team, his 23, and he didn't want to deviate from it.
I'm struggling to think of names at the moment, but you know, if you look back at the Lancaster era, there were so many players you're thinking, why does he not get a shot? Why does he not get a shot? And I don't know why it was. Well, I do know why it was now. He valued his starting 15 so highly, and the group more highly than the individuals. Steve Hansen does. I mean, same thing.
I think we have said the same about Eddie Jones. We have said exactly what you just said about Stuart Lancaster. People have said about Eddie Jones.
Not to the same extent, I don't think. I think Eddie Jones is not as settled on his 15 as Stuart Lancaster is. But, you know, of course, it makes sense that coaches do like a stable 15. I mean, that isn't any secret. It's just the extent to which they do like it.
Yeah. Anyway, there is a level of depth and a level of talent coming through.
Yeah.
Which is frightening.
Who has been the best debutant on tour?
Ooh, good question. I don't think he's a debutant, but I have been really impressed by Charlie Yules.
Yeah, Charlie Yules. He's kind of one of these guys who's almost ordained to play England. He doesn't always play for Bath. He's slowly been coming through. He actually played 8 against Toulouse 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And it seems like the hype has been well worth it. But you don't think that Charlie Yules is a top 5 lock in England?
Yules has been good. The three debutants they've had in the back row, in Mark Wilson, Tom Curry and Sam Underhill, I thought were all brilliant. And Harry Williams.
Harry Williams is very good, actually.
As a tight head prop, his work rate, but also just to go and compete.
Give us a bit of scrum porn.
Yeah, compete against that. And Will Collier as well.
Yeah, Will Collier actually.
It was Will Collier in that.
He's been the most impressive player on tour, I reckon, for the new lot.
No, I'd say.
Was he a debutant? He's been the most impressive for me.
I would go with Curry or Underhill.
Yeah, I could.
They both only played 60 minutes.
So did Collier. He came on.
He came on twice.
He only played 40 minutes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's quite interesting because Underhill is a tackling machine, although he did miss one for a try. But I just think Curry's kind of groundwork and breakdown work is slightly superior. But, you know, what options?
I think it's going to be a long time before either of them play for England again.
I think Hill will come into the squad again before Curry.
Underhill. Yes, I agree with
Underhill, sorry, yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think Wilson might have a shot as well.
That'd be cool.
He should.
Because he's flexible as well. He can play 6 or 7.
Yeah, and he feels like his performance seemed a little bit more mature. I mean, yeah, I think that's pretty.
He is about 7 years older. than.
But like, do you know when he comes on, he does have a leadership quality that a lot of others don't.
Yeah.
And do you know who he reminds me of a little bit in that style? It's kind of like Phil Dowson.
A little bit. I know what you mean.
Maybe not the greatest player, but a very, very good leader.
A very good all-round. Because Wilson's hands are actually very good as well.
Yeah,
I think he reminds me quite a lot of Robshaw.
Yeah, I can see that.
Got a similar skill set.
I can see that. Robshaw, or even someone like Warburton. Not quite as good, but someone like that.
Yeah.
He can carry, he's athletic, he's quick, good at the breakdown, tackles hard.
There's not many positions that England aren't getting towards having three really good options. Where? Centre, probably.
Hooker.
Outside centre.
Marchant
probably.
And Joseph. And Slade.
There's not enough of Marchant on tape, though, to make me suggest he's England quality yet. I mean, he's got some very good bits.
Very good year this year.
Yeah, he's had some good bits, but
it's his first proper Premiership season.
He's 20.
I mean, the drop off from the England Jonathan Joseph or a Teo if he was 13 down to Marchant is still fairly substantial.
But he is still only 20.
He's 20. So he's just had his first year in the Premier.
Tell you what,
I think he's coming up.
Sam James, that's your boy.
I'd go for Marchant over Sam James.
Behave yourself. You don't know what you're talking about. anything else about
the... one thing I just someone tweeted us and spotted the same thing I thought. I wanted to talk about Joe Launchbury's grooming.
Grooming,
his personal grooming. Dan Wright got podcast and said, I can't work it out. Is Launchbury growing a rubbish beard or a massive pair of Dickensian sideburns? It is an interesting look.
Yeah,
I think he has the look of a man who is absolutely fuming about and walks around not thinking about anything except Warren Gatland. He has a you can imagine him with a picture of Warren Gatland and a dart on a dartboard, and just I don't care about. Do you want to cut your hair? No.
No, not bothered.
No, not bothered. Don't care.
One singular focus. Yeah. I will mention one more thing like this. I can't believe I didn't mention it before. BBC coverage was interesting. Do you watch it?
Andy Robinson and Eddie Butler.
Andy Robinson as the colour guy.
Yeah. Oh. No thanks.
He used the phrase technical penalty. Oh. Yeah. He was at pains to let us know whether it was a technical penalty or a not technical
penalty. Yeah, because a technical penalty is worse than a normal penalty. Have I got that wrong?
I don't know.
He also used the phrase that I hate most when commentators use it, which is duty of care.
Yes.
Which doesn't exist in the law book. No wonder you lost your job, Andy. You don't understand the laws.
Phil almost swore then.
Wow, never seen that before. In studio was pretty shambolic, actually. So, of all the quote-unquote broadcasters available to the BBC, they managed to find three guys. And by the way, rugby is a pretty—it's a pretty cool place to hang out. You know, there's lots of guys that like each other. There's lots of guys that you'd love to go for a drink with.
Articulate fellas.
Yeah. In short, rugby is full of great people.
Interesting characters.
Yeah. BBC managed to find three guys that just simply don't seem to like each other very much. You had Brian Moore on one side. Who some of his, I mean, his description of the system that Super Rugby played by was quite incredible. Then you had Jerry Guscott. Do you know when a few weeks ago we had a little bit of an argument in, you know, within us, like the podcast about, you know, when you're talking, it kind of relies on goodwill. Jerry Guscott had zero goodwill to anyone in that studio
apart from Jerry Guscott.
Yeah. So someone make a point and go, that was good. That was a really good run. No, I don't think it was, actually. Yeah, he was at fault there in defence. No, he wasn't. He was just a cantankerous old, just miserable.
He actually said at one point, so they were talking about, we put our heads together and we've come up with a Lions 15 that we would pick for the first test. And Jason Mohammed said, and you all agreed. I was quite surprised with how quickly you agreed. And Jerry Guscott said, I wasn't there. I didn't turn up till after that. So,
on
live TV. Yeah. Just right now.
At one point.
Good old Jeremy.
Almost as if to say, well, I would have disagreed if I was there.
One of them said, kind of in a state of resignation, well, we've got 20 minutes to go. So, I mean, you're on live TV getting paid a lot of money to talk about a wonderful game. We'll do it in the next 20 minutes.
I felt so sorry for Hugo.
Hugo was the only adult.
He's such an adult. He's such a good, fun, interesting guy. And he's normally working with Ben Kay and Austin Healy and Flats and Nick Mullins. And
people who actually like the game.
Yeah. He's working with these brilliant, interesting guys. And then he's sat in between
Jason Moore
and Jeremy Guscott.
He was that man was earning his money trying to keep everyone on track. It was the worst combination of pundits I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And a notable exception would actually be Eagle. Did you see the...
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts?
Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Bit where Uwe said, yeah, you know, I was involved in... I've been involved in Harlequins as Will Collins coming up, involved in his development. And what's his name? Guscott goes, what? You're involved in his development? Do you teach him how to scrummage?
Yeah, I'm not sure you taught him anything about scrummaging, did you?
Hang on, not about teaching him how to be a professional. Look at Ugo. He is, what was he, mid-30s, and he's got like an ounce of fat.
Yeah.
An ounce of fat on him. How about teaching him to be a professional, diet, nutrition, that sort, you know, just being a good pro?
Yeah.
it was incredible to watch.
While we're on that, do you want to comment on the coverage that Sky are offering up at the moment on the Lions Tour? How have you found that?
Do you know what? They have done actually quite a good job. I don't know if Stuart Bonds is on a 25-year contract, which was signed 10 years ago, and he's still got to go through the remaining 15 years.
Presumably
that is what has happened. But actually, the rest of it is pretty good. I like the guys that they're getting in studio. I think they've got good lines experience.
Yes, I've
it's not bad at all. It's not bad at all.
Darby Morris is being nudged out. We haven't seen him at all.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Stuart Barnes back in the day. Stuart was... I mean, do you know what? I do quite like Stuart in a lot of ways as well.
I didn't mind Stuart back in the day.
He's a little bit out of touch.
Yeah, like so dated.
Like, do you know when Murray Walker was finally losing it at the end of F1 talking about blue Ferraris? I wonder if that's kind of what's going on. But no, I think it's been pretty good, actually. And the other thing as well, I think it's Miles Harrison, who is the actual play-by-play, the commentator guy.
Yeah.
Like, he has got a bit of an iconic voice. I mean, you think of some of the great moments in particularly English rugby, and it is him behind it. So, yeah.
I remember 4 years ago when... School of Hard Knocks have been going a couple of years by this point.
Now, have I mentioned that I played in School of Hard Knocks?
Yeah. Every time we do it. The powerful opponents couldn't contain...
I couldn't contain them more. Missed it. Powerful opponent, which was me, obviously, scoring the play.
So it became almost like a bit of a thing where Scott Quinnell would do a rousing, and on the last Lions tour they'd always go, right, let's go to Scott for the token rousing speech. I'm so excited, I got butterflies in my tummy. Come on, Lions,
like, it's kind of like some soft bigotry towards Scott Quinnell in the whole thing. It's like, but they've Scott, you're from a poor background, talk identify with these boys.
But they don't bother doing any of that this time around.
Yeah.
So, he's obviously had a word like, please, can I do some proper talking? Can I talk about, like...
Yeah, I'm a Lion. I've captained Wales. I was one of the top professionals in my position in the world. And you want me to talk to these guys just because I'm from a rough background?
Yeah, Scott, just do that stuff about Dragon.
Yeah. Forget the technical stuff, Scott. We'll get Will to do that. Talk about passion, not being able to read. Okay.
Not being able to read.
No, that's a serious thing.
So, bravo, England. Well done, Scotland. Can I just jump to take a little tangent to the World Rugby Under-20s Championship?
Yes,
It finished today.
Yep.
Yeah.
Did it finish today?
Yeah.
Okay.
The final was earlier, and there's loads of good highlights and stuff on the World Rugby website.
What was the score?
Website.
Ooh.
63 points to something.
10, was it?
10.
To New Zealand?
To New Zealand over England.
Oh, wow.
And England were shorn of a few players who were out in Argentina, but not enough to make up a 43-point difference.
No, evidently there was.
New Zealand's under-20 side is ridiculous.
It is, isn't it?
There's what the hooker. Oh my goodness! Just when you thought they've got Dane Coles and they've got
Cody Taylor behind
Cody him. Taylor and Coltman.
Yeah,
this guy Asafo Aumua.
Mm. Yeah.
Is a ridiculous specimen. Almua?
Yeah.
Almua. Yeah.
He was the chap who made the like 40-yard break against Ireland earlier in the tournament
just
that was being
busted their
shown
face
everywhere.
Wide open. Oh my God, that guy is frightening how good he is.
Yeah.
So I've got on the AllBlacks.com website, I've got Asafo Almua's profile.
Okay.
Are you studying or working outside of rugby? If so, what are you doing? And he says, after school care, teacher aid. I don't know what that means. Does that basically mean he's getting extra help?
Is he an assistant teacher?
Or is he an assistant teacher? They're very
different things, aren't they?
He's either very, very open and honest about his shortcomings, or he's like already got a kind of David Pocock humanitarian kind of...
We don't need any more David Pococks in the game of rugby. Well enough, thank you.
Favourite rugby ground? St Patrick's College number one field.
Ooh.
I like it. Like, he's played super rugby. He's like, no, I like my old school field. Favourite rugby player, Dane Coles, because he has good running game. Earliest or best rugby memory, scoring a try for New Zealand secondary schools against Australian schools, fair enough. Biggest influence on your rugby and why? Guess who he says?
Mielamu. I was going to go with McCaw.
A biggest influence on his rugby? Oh, no, he went for my parents because of their never-ending support for me, my brothers and my sister, bro.
No, nice.
Yeah,
but not his brother. Interestingly, bro.
Last song you had on repeat, Panda. What's I've never heard of it.
No idea.
Some cool kid will know what that is.
I'm just having a look at the St Patrick's College field. Panda.
I hate it when I get stepped in rugby, bro. I hate it when I get stepped, bro. I can't live without pies, lad. If he wasn't a rugby player, he would be president of America.
aim high.
Yeah, absolutely.
Fair play.
He is going to be a professional rugby player. He's going to be one for many years.
Nothing about coffee with the boys.
No incredibly. Coffee with the boys.
That's amazing.
A bit worried about the lack of coffee with the boy culture in New Zealand.
Oh no, there's a big culture. Don't worry about the culture. He just seems to be missed out on.
He'll
it.
Grow into it, I guess.
Yeah, it's an acquired taste, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, good for him.
Jamie George was interviewed and was talking about coffee with boys.
Oh, was he?
A lot. And saying how Sean O'Brien, he likes going to coffee with the boys. Him and Sean O'Brien have become coffee buddies.
Yeah, nice.
On the Lions tour. It's nice. Coffee bringing men together. It's good.
There's a few people introducing the sink to coffee. Seems like there's a few Instagram
the sink.
Videos.
Who's the sink?
Yeah, Instagram
Sinclair.
Live videos.
The Sinclair?
Oh, no, it's not Instagram Live. Instagram
Kyle
Stories.
Sink,
how is he not into coffee? Because the Harlequins have got a huge coffee culture.
They do.
Yeah.
Carl Sinclair on the Instagram stories videos of from various people's accounts that I've seen, Carl Sinclair just looks like a kid at Christmas.
Yeah,
he is having the greatest time. Jamie George said that Carl Sinclair is the most excitable and as so far the MVP of everyone on the tour because he's so excited to be there.
Amazing.
He knows every single Living with Lions DVD.
Yeah, that's
by,
so cool.
By word.
The speech, he knows all the
speeches
off by heart, doesn't he?
He's actually said to Jamie George, if we get selected in the test, he loves the moment when, is it Phil Vickery and Andrew Sheridan are head-to-head? And listen to me, and slap. He said he's going to do that to Jamie George before the game.
Love it. I love the fact that they're all rugby fans playing rugby still.
Yeah.
I mean, it's quite easy, I guess, if you're a pro, just to be a little bit detached and be a little bit cynical. So I really enjoy that.
Yeah, I'm loving seeing the excitement of Carl Sinclair from the bits I've seen. So, it's a joy to watch. It is.
Indeed.
Any other games? Do you want to talk about Wales at all? I mean, is that important in any way?
Well, no, because they're their game on the Friday, so Warren Gatland could, which was planned months ago, so Warren Gatland could just... ferry over some mediocre players into the Lions squad.
The only thing worth mentioning, I think we mentioned on yesterday's pod, was the Halifanua hit, which was incredible.
Yeah, that's
and correctly refereed as well, because he wrapped his arms, but Corey Allen had already bounced 2 yards back by the time his arms had closed.
We do have some semi-transfer news, don't we?
Well, so this week was it last week when it happened, or it was on one of the podcasts we mentioned it? But Carl Ferns officially confirmed he's staying at Lyon, which we've been talking about for a long time, but even as recently as about 3 weeks ago, Gloucester were tweeting about their new signings for the next season and Carl Ferns was being mentioned.
Yeah, Gloucester were pretty much, well, they were just holding out for a fee, and rightly so, because they, you know, because he signed the contract. I wouldn't be surprised if Carl Ferns is probably one of the top paid eights in the top 14 behind Louis Picamals, no?
And he certainly, his stats last year would warrant that.
Most carries, most yards,
He was literally
top try scorer for a forward.
Yeah, he was literally the best eight in the top 14 last year.
Yeah,
playing in Lyon,
which says that is enormous.
Yeah, it is a shame that, you know, that I do understand why they do it, but it's just a shame that they couldn't utilize him for England, because surely he's got some use.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Mm. Of course, is the transfers happened, but finally they've sorted out the figures and the sums involved, and that's Denny.
Denny, yeah,
going to sell. There you go.
They've settled out of court for in excess of £200,000. So that is the...
And that's not because Sale did anything wrong. They were sort of stressed. Not because he did anything wrong. We just can't be bothered. We just want to settle. So just...
Well,
yeah.
I mean, obviously someone had to get paid for something, right?
Yeah, they did. They did. And Sale's initial position was, it's a completely different sport. So
he's retired.
No, that wasn't...
He's retired. He retired.
Well,
and then
Sale's initial thing
was, we don't owe him anything.
No, Sale's initial thing is, we will pay you... a fee that was rejected. So I said, right, we'll pay you kind of what we were legally entitled to, which is equal to the loss suffered by the club, which they kind of worked out to be his salary, because it was so low. So
salary times three.
Yeah, something like that. And then they kind of, everyone came to agreement that it will be, well, whatever the figure is. Knowing a little bit about this behind the scenes, I can tell you that will probably just about cover the costs of the solicitors. Because this has got very, very expensive. It's also not good for rugby league, because let's just assume behind the scenes they've come... I mean, the fact it's settled out of court is actually quite good for rugby league. And the reason it is good is because there's nothing public about how they've come to this figure.
So there's no precedent set.
Yes, exactly. So if they said five times salary, this is going to put enormous pressure on rugby league. When a premiership club comes sniffing and says, oh, he's only been paid 20k, here's 100k, and we'll take it in our hands.
Yeah.
Which would be no problem for a lot of premiership clubs. So the fact that it isn't out in the open probably is a fairly good thing, because the last thing rugby league needs...
Good thing for league.
Yeah, the last thing rugby league needs is premiership clubs stealing all of their talent. The flip side to this, however, is this could be what saves rugby league, because it is desperate for cash. So if you could sell one or two players a year at 500k, that is...
Or 200k or something, whatever it is.
Well, if you get 500k for someone, that's what, a quarter of your salary cap? 2 million salary cap, I think it is?
Yes, it's about that.
So it's kind of a double-edged sword.
But I don't think... So they're very, very rarely transfer fees in rugby.
Yeah.
Very rarely.
Well, it depends if they're buying someone out of the contract, isn't it?
Yeah, which is
a transfer fee, really, is it? That's just a...
It is buying them out of the contract, so that is what transfer fees in football are to do.
But it's not compensating them for anything. It's just
it's
only equal to. But no, transfer fee is kind of like a
no. So like Louis Picamon went for whatever it is. That isn't just how much Northampton will be paying him.
Yeah.
That'll be how much Northampton will be paying him. Plus, I think it's a Northampton.
Plus.
Yeah.
Plus. Same with...
It's normally to do with the cost of getting another player in.
Yeah.
So it does work effectively as compensation for the loss of that player and to get a new player in.
I don't really...
But it happens so rarely in rugby. Yeah. We've seen a few just this year. So Denny, Ferns, although it's not really a transfer, but he is effectively signed for Gloucester and then been transferred back to Lyon. So Lyon have paid compensation for that.
Yeah, the other reason...
And Picamon's...
The other reason you're not seeing it... transfer fees building up in rugby, thank God, by the way, because what a waste of money, is because of the salary cap. So there'd be no point in spending £6 million on a player if you can't get him within the cap. That's why you've got to wait for the contracts to run out. On the other hand, if you were that player who's been bought for £6 million, my first question would be, well, if you're willing to pay £6 million for me, how much are you willing to put in my pocket?
On the Carl Ferns thing, he did get sub stick from frustrated Gloucester fans and some rugby fans in general.
They're a passionate lot.
Yeah, I can understand the annoyance. I think Carl Ferns didn't help himself by giving it the oxygen. He was replying to people on Twitter and going through, which I would always advise people not to do. Don't give it oxygen.
You're actually quite a good person to listen to about Twitter, because I would have done exactly the same thing as Carl Ferns.
You would probably gone one further and tried to get their name and address and hunted them down.
Yeah, I've actually tried to do this before. I'll tell you about that.
But I can also understand Carl Ferns being upset. And my take on this is, it is a short career. It's up to him where he plays. And if the clubs have come to an agreement, then who's anyone else to say something?
You're sounding remarkably like me
If he wants to earn money, that's fine. I am, however, very, very disappointed that Carl Ferns isn't thinking about 20 years' time when he's looking back at his rugby
Can I ask
career,
you this?
When he could have been an England cap by this time next year with a World Cup looming.
So,
and I'm really disappointed he hasn't backed himself in that sense.
I kind of agree with you, Tim. I'm disappointed that we won't see him in an England shirt, and I am disappointed that he's not. So if he'd backed himself, so however much Leona paid him, let's say he's going to get an extra 300k, just pulling a figure out of the air. If he'd have played for England 15 times, if he'd backed himself to make the match day 23 15 times in a season, which in some seasons there are that many games, that is 300k. And it's almost
plus all the endorsements.
Plus you get the kudos and all that. Now it's not guaranteed.
No.
And he could blow his knee in the first game of next season and that's it. His career could be over.
That's a really good point. It's something I've never thought of. If you've got a 3-year contract with your club and you blow up your knee, well, you get 3 years worth of money, right?
Probably in France because of the employment laws.
I mean, I don't know, but it's...
No. Most professional rugby contracts, again, I don't know, maybe when you get to real elite levels it might be different, but I think for your average Premiership player, the deal will be if you have, I think it's 6 months continuous...
That's right, they can...
...unavailability, your contract can just be written off however long and however much it's worth.
Right.
But players always carry insurance as well.
So, I guess then for England, the risk of blowing out your knee, you would be covered. Substantially covered if your career ended in an England shirt.
So, well, yeah, probably. You the amount you could be insured for would be significantly higher because you've got the potential to earn Gloucester money plus England money. Anyway, we're going into a bit too much detail, but yeah.
Anyway, it's a shame. But Leon's gain is definitely it's Carl Ferns and our and possibly England's loss.
Yeah, so Gloucester's loss, England's loss, but Leon's gain because he's a hell of a player.
Well, Leon had their team unveiling the other week, and apparently it was absolutely packed because this is the first Leon team to be able to stay up, and that's a big deal for them because they've spent a lot of money in the past on a lot of players and never ever done it.
He's got bigger and bigger. He is
Carl Ferns.
Absolutely enormous.
Yeah,
he's the big silverback. He's enormous.
Yeah. Other games this week, Japan Ireland. Did either of you see?
No, but I heard Japan battered them. Japan. Ireland battered Japan.
Yeah, 50-22. Another good performance by the Ireland youngsters. Keith Earls again. Keith Earls has been very good this, albeit they're playing lesser opposition. Good performance.
Are all these tours over? Are they all mini tours, like two games?
So there is a round of fixtures next week as well, which we can get into at the end of the show, which is probably quite shortly.
By the way, I did see another game this week, which I forgot to mention. South Africa, France.
Yes, I saw the last half an hour of that.
I didn't see it.
It was pretty good, actually. The French started pretty strongly. They had two real periods of pressure. So, beginning of the second half, they were all over South Africa. But South Africa finished a lot of chances. So, I'll tell you who is it. I mean, you probably know he's a good player anyway. But Khaleesi, don't know his first name.
Yeah.
He can play.
He was playing six, wasn't he?
Yeah, what's his normal position?
Six or seven.
Is it?
Yeah, which is obviously reversed in South Africa.
He
plays for the Stormers. He's captain of the Stormers this year. Yeah. He's a hell of a player.
I mean, he had one catch, which was like fingertips, stooping down, and then finished off for a try. His carrying was brilliant.
His break through the middle of the ruck.
But he's quite old as well. This one.
Oh, no, it wasn't the second. It was the rip, wasn't it, in the second half? The rip and then the spin and then accelerate.
But he's quite old as well. He's at 27, 28.
Which is not particularly old for a flanker.
I'm more surprised I've not heard of him before.
He's been around a few years. Oh, yeah. He's. I wonder how many caps he's got. He has been around for a few years. He's a hell of a player.
And France just feel a bit French at the moment. A bit modern. not traditional French either. Not traditional French, more modern day French. They just can't seem to put anything together. They've got these enormous players. They've got a Fijian winger who had one incredible run, but just nothing of any substance was produced by France. And they've got, I'm going to be a little bit controversial here and say they might have the best pool of back rows in world rugby, or maybe the second best. It's up there.
Yeah, they've got a lot of talent,
and yet they just can't do anything with it.
Well, part of it, going back to what we've mentioned it a few times, but your Rugby Dungeon, interview with Ben Darwin, talking about player stability, team stability.
Yeah.
Half their players weren't available in the first test because they were playing in the top 14 final, or it was the week after the top 14 final. So they've had a complete overhaul, 7 or 8 changes between the two tests. So there's no stability.
Yeah, and they're, all the French clubs are back in work now.
Of course they are.
Yeah, they've started their pre-season. Just one last thing on that. The French flanker Camara, I love that guy.
Yacouba Camara.
Yacouba Camara, I think, is class.
Yeah.
So is Gordon. And so
he's
is...
only young, that Camara.
I'm not sure he is that young, you know. He's like 6'4", rangy guy.
Yeah, yeah. But he's like 21, isn't he?
I've got a feeling he's a little old. I think he's about 25. But I could be wrong. He carries well. He does everything pretty well. And he's very, very strong.
Okay. I'm going to jump us back to New Zealand. Because I think there's some important things worth discussing as far as the Lions goes.
Okay.
One, Warren Gatland said in a press conference that Sam Warburton is under pressure for his place. Now, if Warren Gatland is saying in a public forum Sam Warburton is under pressure for his place, I think that means Sam Warburton is not starting, barring injury.
I agree with that 90%.
Okay.
I think I'm still not quite sure.
Gatland works in mysterious ways. I'll wait until I see the team.
We've seen the team for Tuesday.
We've seen the team for Tuesday, which we'll get to. So the second point is that Johnny Sexton was in a press conference and was asked, and again, they're only reporting bits of what he said, but he was highlighting how well him and Farrell played 10-12 for 50 minutes against the Crusaders together, and he thinks, you know, that he's ready to form that partnership again. I just have a sneaky suspicion. I said it last week. I have a sneaky suspicion that Gatland might well go that route. We will see. Maybe test 2 and 3. We'll see.
Yeah, I think he's only going to do that. That's like his roll the dice strategy.
Yeah.
If halfway through the second test, they've lost the first test, they're 15 points down halfway through the second test, that he's got to try and open it up. Then that's what he goes to.
That's fair.
I don't think he'll start with that.
I think he's going to... start with Tail, as you do actually, but I think if he gets in trouble he'll probably look for more of the same.
Yeah.
Probably bring it, call it Banahan, move north to 13. That kind of, I think that's more likely.
Jamie Roberts
is in New Zealand. Yeah, of course. Yeah,
enough of this ball playing nonsense with Teal.
Stuart McCloskey's
in.
And then finally, as you mentioned, Phil, the team for the game against the Chiefs, I think, is quite revealing as well.
Yes.
In a few places. So Elliot Daly and Liam Williams both start in the back three. So George North, who a lot of
people... I am gobsmacked at that.
I am gobsmacked. Well, no, I'm not, actually. Because, do you know what? You go back a few months, and again, I could be saying, sorry, Warren, you knew what you're doing. You got it absolutely
Warren
right. And I'm really sorry.
Yeah,
I'm sure he does know what he's doing.
No, and he really does.
No, he's done it before. He made the tough call with JD2 last time round.
Yeah, and Bod.
Over Bod. Fair enough. But, the mind boggles about George North and whether he deserves it. They see stuff in training, I guess. Maybe they know that it's just a matter of when, not if, he sparks into life. But I'm really surprised with how poor he's been.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
Daly and Williams, both in the back three, means George North is starting.
George North is starting, and it also means most likely JJ is going to be the outside back on the bench, Jonathan Joseph.
Yeah, because Jonathan Joseph could easily play wing.
Yeah.
He's not ideal, but he could do it.
Oh, definitely.
And Halfpenny could slot to wing. Watson could tuck across the fullback.
Yeah. They've got a few options.
North could go centre if the... Well. And then CJ Sanders starts in the back row, which suggests to me he's not going to be on the bench.
Yes.
Which means
Warburton will be on the bench.
Yeah.
Or Warburton starts and possibly Shawnee is on
the
bench.
There's no 8 cover, though. Mind you,
Sean O'Brien can push across. It's an auxiliary 8.
The other thing is, as well as the 5, or was it 5? Yeah, 5 of the 6 new faces who are on the bench. So officially, 8. You know, when they come on, if they come on, Dacey, Dell, Francis, Hill, and Russell and Davies will be Lions. But also on the bench, Tommy Seymour, fine.
Yeah.
Alan Wynne-Jones.
Yes.
Again, if you want to just read the logical path, is that it's going to be a Crew-Todgy second row partnership.
Yeah, I mean, you couldn't possibly play Crews or a Todgy in this game. So that's that. You'd probably struggle with Henderson because he played, and Alan Wynn has had a whole week off after playing back-to-back games. Don't be surprised if he does not come on at all.
Did Alan Wynn have a week off for any particular?
Yeah, because he played.
He played Saturday, Tuesday.
Saturday and Tuesday.
Okay.
So he didn't play at the weekend.
He will not play in this game. I'd be amazed if he came on.
It's interesting what number shirt he's wearing.
What number shirt is he wearing?
20. Which is back row.
Backup. Also, maybe he is just there.
I think
as needed.
Which does raise the question: why did you not call
up another guy? Yeah,
because Anwen Jones,
Nathan Hughes.
So there's no more. So
no,
Croutod Gil start. Well, just one of the Welsh players.
Just one of the Welsh guys.
Thomas Young or.
Oh God.
No, because the thing is,
he's going to sit on the bench. You've already got Dacey and Francis.
Yeah. These guys are not with the squad. They're going to go home after this game. Certainly after the Hurricanes game. They're not going to hang around.
No, they're not. They've got two more test matches after this one.
Those guys will not be there for the test matches.
I am with Jay on this.
They are going to get
those guys on.
They're going home.
There is no way Thomas Francis, even if the Sink and Ty Furlong and Dan Cole, if they all get injured, Thomas Francis is still not going to get that test team.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is kind of
Harry Williams.
I really don't want it to be the case, but just out of curiosity, I'm almost. No, I don't wish ill.
No,
injury.
No, you don't wish this.
No, I don't wish this to happen.
Yeah.
I wish there was a sliding doors parallel universe where I could just go and find out if he would actually pick Thomas Francis to start a test match.
So these boys will be on a plane home straight after the Hurricanes game. Thank you. Do you know what I don't like about this whole situation? Is these lads who've been called up are getting a lot of stick now. Even if it's tongue-in-cheek, like, oh, Charlotte Church is next up or whoever it is. And actually, all they've done is help out the Lions. I mean, it's not like they're...
None of us would say no. If Warwick Gatland gave me a phone call now, Tim, get on the first plane.
I'd be lording it in people's faces.
I'd feel very, very sheepish around the camp.
I reckon. I'd be strutting.
High-fiving Haskell.
Right, boys? I'd be on the top. I'd be on the back of the bus.
I would genuinely.
You'd start doing Instagram videos going, me and my best mate Hask. My best mate.
It'd be awesome.
Greatest night of my life.
But he is getting, they are all getting a lot of stick, and it doesn't really sit well.
If you got called up to the Lions, Jay, I would preemptively write your obituary. If you get thrown onto that professional rugby team, you are done for.
Nobody's directing their problems at the players.
Yeah, but you know, there is a lot of talk
around
it.
There's frustration on social media, on Twitter. So you are right.
Of course they're frustrating,
these lads.
Because it's a bloody farce.
It isn't a farce.
How is it not a farce?
Because the farce would be, I mean, I don't know if you know this, the farce would be calling up Launchbury, telling him to miss a test, flying him all the way over here to sit on a bench. He doesn't want to do that. Warren Gatland doesn't want him to do that. It's going to benefit nobody. The best thing is getting these guys to sit on the bench, help out the team.
It's going to benefit nobody.
It's going to benefit nobody, and then they go home afterwards. Well, they're here for 2 games.
How about if having picked the opposition you want, agreed on the schedule, you pick the players that you need.
He didn't agree on the schedule. You pick the players you need for the tour.
He knew the schedule. You pick the players you need for the tour and then replace, do it as has always happened, injury replacement.
He knows the schedule.
Rather than half a dozen
fodder. So he knows the schedule, but he didn't pick the schedule.
So?
Okay, so.
When did he know the schedule? 2 years ago?
Okay, 3 years ago. Whatever it is, doesn't matter. So knowing the schedule, he's just basically done the best thing for that tour group. And I'll just very quickly go back why. Too big a tour party, again, is going to benefit nobody, as you saw last time that they went to New Zealand. Now that they're here, they've got this peculiar thing.
How many did Clive Woodward take?
45. Gatland has taken 42.
Yeah. So actually, he's not far
no different. Yeah, it's virtually no different.
With the six extra, it's more.
Yeah, which is kind of what is needed. But you don't need to take these guys for the whole tour. If you look at the last time that they went, it was an absolute disaster. So I understand what he's doing. Now, you don't need the best players in the British and Irish Lions to sit on the bench, because all the decisions have been made now. All of the competition has run its course. They know who the test team is, and they just need bodies. So I don't think it's right to call up the best players in the British and Irish for the British and Irish teams to come over and sit on the bench, because they've got no chance of participating in the tests. And they're literally, I mean, it's a pretty rubbish role, actually.
Well, hold on. One thing, I'll just pick you up on something, just go back about a minute or two. One thing you said is, if there are injuries, there's no way Thomas Francis is starting a test match, and they'll call up someone else.
Yeah, 100%.
So there's the reason why, if you feel the need, you do need to fill your squad with more bodies. And actually, I would just argue what you should be doing is replacing like for like when there's injuries. Bring a player in for Hogg. Moriarty, bring a back rower in for Moriarty. And take what you need. But if you are going to bring players in, then that would be a farcical situation. Let's say two tight head props do go down and go home.
Let's call them up.
Flying out someone else, you're going, oh, yeah, that's fine. Yeah, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, have Thomas Francis there, but no, Tom, you're still not involved.
But I think the players know that. I mean, there's no way Corey Hill, Dorsey, Thomas Francis rocked up thinking that they're going to play a test. They know the score. They're just helping out.
Just to put this into some perspective, we've now spent minutes in the last two pods talking about the bench for a midweek test.
Can I just point out
this is irrelevant
commercial genius by Gatland, because we're talking about the Lions. This is what
we are. We're not talking about the starting team, which is
exactly. So when else would anyone ever talk about the bench?
More of a scandal is your man who hear him now, believe him later. Jared Payne starting in the test match at 15 is starting JB two games in a week in two different positions. That's going to be a tough ask.
Yeah, where is he starting? 13?
13, So that combined with Lee Williams and Elliot.
Yeah, you're right about JJ.
JJ is going to be the bench. So you can pretty much reel off the starting 15.
Let's do it.
So the starting 15 plus subs.
Mako.
George.
Furlong.
Krutoji. The only question is whether Warburton starts. I say he doesn't.
So I'm going to say he does.
The only thing is, O'Brien could be better impact off the bench.
Yeah.
But I personally wouldn't do it.
O'Brien, Faletau.
Yeah.
There's nothing to suggest that Sean O'Brien isn't creating enough impact starting.
He's creating a hell of a lot of impact.
So, Murray, Sexton.
Yeah.
Teo, JD2.
Yeah.
North, Watson, Halfpenny.
Yes.
There is just one more.
And then the bench is Owens.
McGrath.
Sink.
Alwyn Jones. Then Warburton or O'Brien, potentially.
Warburton, then it'll be
Webb. So it's confirmed that Farrell should be fit.
So Farrell.
And then JJ.
That is the Lions 23. Don't worry about waiting for the announcement. We've just done it.
So just two things on that. I disagree with I just can't see Warburton and Omani playing at the same time. So I think it's going to be Warburton or Omani, not Warburton or O'Brien.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
The only reason I say O'Brien is because he's a better impact off the bench.
Mm.
But, yeah, you're probably right.
I can almost see... Oh, no, let's not go into Warburton not being on the bench, or we've done that. The other thing which is really interesting is, in the Lions contract, they can only play six games. Johnny Sexton's on four already. It means he might have to miss a test.
No.
Yeah, that is in the contract. Not duty of care, the whatever it is.
Surely it's not... It's six games worth of 80 minutes.
I need to see the contract, but it was in the Times last week that he might breach his welfare. Player welfare clause. And there's one thing you can't mess around with nowadays, that's player welfare, because everyone gets into a hysterical rage.
But you just said Gatland knows what he's doing.
Gatland does know what he's doing.
Except he might have his first choice 10 unavailable due to player welfare issues.
Well, that's exactly why you should call up more guys from the Welsh tour.
I can't believe that.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't believe that is going to happen.
Well,
watch
his space.
I can't believe Gatland would have an oversight like that.
Well, even if Sexton's on the bench, because Bigger had a concussion, I don't know, maybe because he had to start Sexton against the Maori.
Do you think so you're suggesting he's just trying to... he might go, oh, I didn't realise. Oh, Bigger, he'll have to start.
No, I think Warren Gatland will go, welfare, forget it, I'm going to win a test.
Yeah.
Look what I did to George North.
Exactly. George, you're fine, right?
Yeah.
George? Yeah, that's what's going to happen.
Excellent. Predictions for the game on Tuesday?
Oh, should we do a Leo Vegas prediction?
We should do.
LeoVegas.com?
Yeah.
Our wonderful bet partners.
We'll do two.
Will we?
Can you hear that?
No. Leo Vegas is where you can go for brilliant bets on rugby. They love their rugby. We love their rugby. They love us. We love them. And you will too. So, yeah. So our game of the week is the Chiefs. First off, the Lions versus the Chiefs. Game Tuesday, 8:35 a.m. kickoff again. And we'll do a post-game podcast at some point on the Tuesday.
Will
well.
We?
Well, no, actually, no, let's not.
We won't. Let's
no, we'll
scrap
up. Do one once the Lions team is announced, which will be Wednesday.
Wednesday or Thursday. Yeah.
So we'll do one then and really build up to the first test. I'm really struggling to get really enthusiastic about this one because it feels all about the test. And there is an argument. I kind of have come around to this thinking about these extra bodies. I think there is an argument between almost drawing a line at one point in the tour for future Lions tours and the tests.
It goes test for test.
Once it's tests, done.
Yeah, so the week before just the test, there we go. Yeah, there's no the provincial game in between the test is, who cares? Chiefs for me by 20 points.
So Chiefs are missing a fair few players. Mm-hmm. They've got Stephen Donald, captain in the side from 10.
Make it 25.
I think the Lions are going to sneak this. Lions by 5.
I think they'll win comfortably by 17.
So you think Lions by 17, I think Chiefs by 20. Only a 37-point gap.
Hold on. Chiefs,
Lions by 5.
Chiefs aren't playing any All Blacks or anything, are they?
No,
All Blacks. None of the boys who played for the Maori All Blacks either.
No.
Just remember what happened when Wales played the Chiefs.
True.
Oh, yeah. Well, we'll see. I've said it now.
And Phil, you reckon Lions by...
Lions by 5.
Lions by 5. I kind of think you probably will be the closest. And the next game will be the test. What are we going to... Do you want to throw some scorelines?
Should we do that? Once the teams out. Once the teams are out.
Yeah, we'll do that in the week.
Ooh, God, it's exciting though, isn't
it? Oh, it's so exciting. It's come round. It's a bit like Christmas Day when you're a kid. Like you wait for it, and then it just goes by like that.
Yeah, exactly right.
It's just going to be gone before we know it, so we need to savour it.
Yeah, last announcement. I am watching the first set in Barcelona. Please get in contact with me with places to watch this damn test. I've emailed a couple of bars. They've not emailed me back. Remember, I want to watch it in the style which I've become accustomed to. So get in contact with me on Twitter at Jay Beardmore or Rugby Podcast.
The most niche request for someone to get
Barcelona.
In touch. If you happen to own a bar, know a bar, live in Barcelona, we know
Do you know what would be ideal
it's
for
a very
me?
Specific bar as well, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you know what would be ideal for me? If I can find like an all-day brunch somewhere with a TV that will show the Lions and then drink until at least mid-afternoon.
So when
at my leisure.
When are Phil and I going to do a podcast with you after the Lions game? Are you going to be smashed?
Well, I'll be merry.
Yeah,
but I'm always merry, aren't I? So I'll be fine.
Always merry.
Always merry. It's relative. I don't know. Are we ahead or behind in Barcelona?
One hour ahead.
Europe is ahead of... Us,
is
right.
that good for us?
So it'd be 9:30 a.m. rather than 8:30 a.m.
Perfect. That is going to be good for me. I will Skype in. And if you need me for Talk Sport as well, Tim, you let me know.
I'll let you know.
If you need me, let me know, Tim. JB will be drunk.
Got you. Right. So we are at Rugby Podcast on Twitter. We're on Instagram, Egg Chasers Podcast. We're on Facebook, Egg Chasers. We are everywhere that you can download or get a podcast. And you should subscribe on all of those places and you'll get every episode delivered straight to you. We're weekly every week and we're multiple episodes during this Lions period because we love it that much. Anything else? Any other business?
Only to say that another small announcement. Others say that our flights are now booked to Philadelphia. We will be going to that game. We'll have more information on this as it comes up. But start planning your diary because it's going to be epic.
16th September, Philadelphia. There's the Premiership game. Who cares what the teams are? It's Saracens, Newcastle, but whatever, even if they're not your teams, join us in one. It's got an amazing sporting heritage, that city.
Rocky?
Rocky.
I mean, that's a made-up guy, but yeah.
And other stuff.
The one where Mark Wahlberg made the Eagles team.
Oh, yeah.
That happened. I can't remember what that's called.
We'll have to see if there's an Eagles game on that Sunday.
Does the Always Sunny in Philadelphia bar actually exist?
Paddy's Pub.
Paddy's Pub.
I doubt it.
I bet there is a tribute to it somewhere in Philadelphia.
I want to find that tribute. One of my favourite shows.
So yeah. Anyway, get that in your diary, but don't worry about anything else. I'm losing energy now. I need to go.
Yes.
I need to eat.
Too hot.
Too hot, man. The hottest day of the year, and we've been down here in the dungeon talking rugby. So we will see you on the next one.
Goodbye.
Let the boys play.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.